From 9 to 5 Mac, this is Stack Trace, a show where we talk about Apple news, rumors, and today, special events. I am John Sundell, and joining me, like always, is my good friend Guy Rambo. How's it going, Mr. Rambo?
Hey John, doing great here.
Excellent. Now, Rambo, much of the material for this show comes from your kind of code-level spelunking, but there's another person who is responsible for a lot of the things that we and the Apple community in general talk about, and that's with all his exclusive reports and really big scoops on what Apple might be up to, what their plans are for the future, and so on. And that's Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who we are super excited to have on the show today. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me. That's very kind. You guys do a great job.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
I kind of feel like I'm doing a podcast here with Apple's two most wanted people.
Most wanted. It's funny. I'm just doing my job, reporting on what they're working on. I'm sure they like Rambo less.
Yeah, I heard they love me.
So a lot of the spelunking that Rambo does is kind of on a code level, where he looks into the source code and tries to figure out what Apple is up to from that. But your tactics are a little bit different. You are talking to people, interviewing people, and trying to figure out like the big picture from that. So what does kind of your process look like?
So actually some history. So what's really interesting about that is I got my start in this field around the beginning of 2010. End of 2009, if I remember correctly, and it was actually at 9to5Mac where you guys are at right now. Worked with Seth for, way back in the day when I first started 9to5Mac, it was just me and Seth for, I would say, about 2 years, and then Jordan Kahn, who's still there, as you know, you work with him, Zach Hall, it was us, Ben Lovejoy, I believe we overlapped a bit. Ben Mayo, I think we overlapped very slightly as well. A few other great people, just great people. And so anyways, when we first started doing this, Seth was the best early on at getting scoops from, human sources. When I came in, the thing that I focused on is sort of what Rambo does today is the code level stuff. If you don't have those connections, there's still other ways to investigate things and looking into things. And so deep in the code, some of the early stuff was Siri, looking into Siri. There were a few other things. I believe we had some code about FaceTime, some stuff about LTE before they did those. I remember a lot of stuff was leaking in iOS 4.3. Rambo would have had a ton of fun with iOS 4.3. There was so much stuff about the iPad 2 in there and the iPhone 4S. That was actually unbelievable. So that's what I focused on early on before sort of transitioning to the human sources interviews type of thing you described.
Yeah, those were the good days for spelunking code level stuff because there wasn't so much scrutiny like it is today, and I bet it was a lot easier to find stuff. And a jailbreak was usually out very soon after a new release, and jailbreaking helps a lot with this type of investigation.
I agree with that, and Stephen Troughton Smith, he was always good at this as well. So that's worked with him early on as well. So I feel like you're kind of doing what I used to do back in the day, and hopefully you, Rambo, continue doing it for a long time and start getting into the human sources side of things too.
Yeah, really cool. Passing the spelunking torch, if you will.
Oh, no. Rambo's great.
So the reason we wanted to have you on the show today is to talk a little bit about Apple's recent event, because this kind of it presents an interesting shift in Apple's kind of overall narrative and becoming more and more kind of like a services company and focusing more on services, with this event being all about services. So first off, we wanted to hear what were your kind of immediate reactions after watching yesterday's event?
I've never been or seen an Apple event before where there were 5 major announcements and only one of them was ready today.
Yeah.
And if you could even consider Apple News Plus as being ready. I mean, you see Steven, I'm sure Rambo, I haven't seen yet, but other people pulling that thing apart. And it seems like a very much a half-baked product, being able to export PDFs of news and having a pinch the zoom heavy interface on the non-optimized magazines. So, I mean, that's just an aside if you consider that ready or not. But anyways, right. Very weird that they packaged together a bunch of services that aren't even coming in the near future. We have the credit card in summer, which is code for August, September. We have the TV service coming in May. We have the original content service coming in the fall, which is code word for probably October, November, if not December. So many things super far off. We have the gaming service, and the gaming service, you know, just to me, that reads like a classic iOS 13.1 or 13.2 update. So they're saying the fall. We'll probably talk more about it at WWDC, have sessions around it, and then talk more about it in the fall. Probably won't make it to the first iOS 13 release, and it'll be in a successive 1 or 0.2. So it's all pretty down the road. So to me, this feels like Apple accelerated their services initiatives they were working on, roped them all together into one event and narrative that they could present in March to sort of offset the slowed iPhone sales they were seeing in November through January.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe it's something for Wall Street, something for the investors to look at and to see that they have a future that's not directly tied into selling more iPhones.
Yeah, to me, it seemed like a Wall Street thing as well.
It seems also to me a little bit like they needed to do this event because they are buying a lot of content. They are partnering with game developers. Like, all these efforts involve so many external companies and external people that it was just impossible to keep it under wraps. And we've been hearing like about the Apple TV service for a long time now. It's been kind of this, you know, open secret, if you will. So I feel also that they kind of needed to do this event in order to just get it out in the open.
That's fair. I mean, the original content service, when you're working with Hollywood and working with dozens of agents and producers and everyone in this area talks about that type of stuff. And even Apple was announcing these things on a weekly basis. So I think that was pretty much out in the open. The gaming service, I mean, we didn't really hear much about that before the event. Cheddar reported it in January that they were talking about it. I had heard on Friday that it was going to be announced on Monday, so I included it in my preview on Saturday over the weekend, if you guys saw that. So that's that. The credit card, pretty well established that was going to happen, but what we didn't think until right before the event was that the credit card would be the sort of smash hit of the event. It seemed like that was the big takeaway. And for you guys, I mean, that's not even available outside the US, and knowing how long it takes Apple to transport these things from region to region, these types of smaller niche things, it'll probably be a while till you guys get your hands on it.
Yeah, anything that's tied into like the financial system usually takes a long time to roll out internationally. I'm surprised that Apple Pay has been rolling out as quick as it has.
Yeah, what they are good at is the media stuff. So the App Store, the video service, Apple Music, those types of more media-focused things. They've been probably the best of any technology company in getting it into dozens, if not hundreds of countries. But like you said, the financial stuff, that's pretty much out of Apple's control. If it was up to Apple, the credit card would be in every country in the world tomorrow.
Yeah, totally. That's the classic thing, you know, when people talk about companies like Netflix and Spotify and, you know, why isn't the content available everywhere? And, you know, the obvious answer is that they would want the content to be available everywhere, but you just can't because of licensing and things like that.
Precisely.
Cool. So this event was very interesting. And we talked a little bit about how Apple becoming more of a services company might, you know, the pressure might be coming a little bit from Wall Street and things like that. But what is your overall take on this kind of narrative that they are going for with this service focused narrative?
Yeah, so a lot of the discussion is that services are designed to replace the iPhone, but in my view, this is more so doubling down on the iPhone. You're going to be using these services on Apple devices. The only service that's not tied specifically to the iPhone is the TV thing, which I don't really think is going to be a blockbuster. No pun intended. The credit card is iPhone tied. It's going to do extremely well. The gaming service, I think, is going to be pretty niche, but that's tied to Apple devices. What else was there? There was the news service, Apple devices, and then the TV thing. You have it on Roku, you have it on Amazon Fire, but no Android. But that's because the majority of people use set-top boxes as their way of watching these video streaming services anyways.
Right.
I think we can say they are doubling down on vertical integration with most of the services. And they hinted on it on yesterday's event when they talked about how everything is beautifully integrated with your devices and systems. And then we have the services.
Yeah, exactly. It feels almost like, you know, like the services is the thing that ties all the devices together, right? And if they can get you kind of hooked on Apple News or Apple TV Plus, et cetera, you are just more likely to remain within the ecosystem and to use your devices more together as an ecosystem as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So I wanted to get back a little bit to the game service that they talked about, and this might be a little bit my bias being, you know, a gamer and I love games and things like that, but that one struck me as being kind of interesting, and both from the angle of Apple Arcade, as it's called, both being like...
What a great name, by the way.
Yeah, really great name. I love that name. It feels like a little bit of both tackling the fact that a lot of games in the App Store have become these kind of casino simulations where, you know, using casino gambling tactics to, you know, extract money from people with in-app purchase and things like that. And also kind of Apple moving more towards kind of becoming a little bit of a publisher, it almost seems like, for these type of games. And maybe it looks like they are even funding some of these game developments in order to gain exclusives and things like that. So what's your take on this, Mark? Like, do you feel like this is a strategy to combat those things or to head in that direction?
It sort of feels like after they started seeing the iPhone sales slow down, Tim Cook and the executive team basically went to every division and said, okay, how could we serviceify something that you guys are already doing? How could we add a service on top of what you're already doing? Well, TV was pretty clear, the original content. News, pretty clear, the magazine subscription service. Apple Pay, credit card, right? This one seemed pretty natural for the App Store. Far and away, gaming is the most popular category on the App Store. You've seen other companies from Amazon to Microsoft to Google sort of playing in this gaming subscription world. Of course, they're going to do this. Seemed like a really natural way to get into this field. I think it's probably going to cost $10 a month, if not 15. It's going to be pretty high end. I'm curious how many people are going to subscribe to this. But again, there's this huge, huge younger generation of, I would say, 18 or 16 and 13 and under who are just addicted to gaming on their computers and their Apple TVs, maybe not the Apple TVs, but definitely their iPhones and iPads. And this is going to appeal greatly to those people. So I think for the younger generation, I think it's going to be niche, but I still think that's where the majority of usage is going to come from.
Yeah, I mean, gaming is so popular on the App Store that it deserves its own tab. And now the arcade is going to get its own tab, to which I people have been asking me, and I ask you. I don't expect you to know the answer yet. But where does the updates tab go?
The updates tab? Is the updates tab gone from the... did they replace it with the arcade? Okay.
Yeah, the screenshots show the arcade tab where the updates tab is today and no updates tab.
So I think that the final version, the updates tab will be back and they'll replace the games tab with the arcade tab and they'll just merge games to the games tab with the arcade tab. And at the very top of the, and you'll be able to go between arcade and regular games tab.
I surely hope so. Yeah, I hope that they do that because I love my updates tab. I don't want it gone.
Or they could just move it to the search tab. Search tab, you have updates in the top right. Click it. Or on the today view, you have a updates section, which would make sense to me too, because on the today tab, it's sort of like what's going on today. Okay, today you have a bunch of these updates.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It also depends a little bit on how Apple looks at updates, because updates have kind of shifted a little bit in the way that we think about them. And a lot of companies are even just like continuously delivering their product. So they're not really doing any like major updates in that sense. They are more like having these release notes which says, you know, we are always updating the app every 2 weeks. You get a new update. And in that world, it's also a question whether updates need to have that kind of prominence in the tab bar.
That's fair. I don't think they're going to do this, but probably if you're going to have someone at Apple, if someone at Apple asked me to suggest 5 ways to replace the updates tab, right? Okay, my first, and they want to choose from these top five ideas of mine, right? Okay, idea number one, put it in the Today tab. Idea number two, you put it in the Search tab. Idea number three, you can put it in Settings, right? In the Software Update tab. A couple other ideas, you could just remove it altogether, right? Because of auto updates. I don't think they're going to do that. And maybe a fifth thing, you can put it in the, when you go to your profile in the App Store, manage subscriptions, manage updates in lieu of having a tab. So I think there's, you know, probably at least five different ways that they could do that. And I really don't think it's a big deal, to be honest.
No. Yeah, you can always find a way to place a control somewhere in the UI, even if it's just like another button in another tab or something like that.
Just shake the device.
Exactly. Shake to update. That's going to be the new UI paradigm. So this whole arcade thing, like I mentioned, seems to be Apple also taking a role as a publisher and actually funding some development of games. Do you think that they might do something similar with apps, like create some kind of essential app bundle or Apple-approved bundle of apps that they are kind of funding and delivering in some kind of subscription package in the future?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's going to be there. If you look at different categories of applications that would make sense to be put into a bundle, I think they'll look into all of those. Immediately, gaming is the only one that makes sense, or at least if you're going to try one, the first one you're obviously going to do is gaming. Very possible they do productivity. They can work on monthly subscription bundles for Microsoft Office. You know, there's so many different ones. They might even work on these for productivity, different developers individually. So I think there's a few options.
Yeah. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit now and look a little bit into the future, because that's what we like to do on the show. And the next big event we have coming up in a couple of months is WWDC. So I wanted to hear you, Mark, like, what are your expectations for WWDC? What do you think Apple is up to for their developer conference?
Good question. So we already saw some iOS 10.15 yesterday with the TV app. That'll be part of that, obviously. We saw Apple Games, big discussion there in terms of cross-platform applications. So I think a lot of the discussion at WWDC is going to be about cross-platform. This Marzipan thing that we've been talking about for a while now. Other stuff, iOS 13, big update for the iPad. Mac, can imagine there'll be some parity there. I really think they're going to do an Apple Music app and finally get rid of iTunes. I think they have to. It would make sense to go along with the TV app, and then you have a TV app with the legacy movie and rental store integrated into that, as they announced yesterday. Then you have the Apple Music app with the legacy iTunes single download, album download music store integrated in that as well. So that would make a ton of sense for me. You can have a section in the Apple Music app for Mac to iOS device syncing and updates over the wire and restore DFU mode, et cetera, integrated into that. I think it's more of a branding exercise and user interface development. What else would there be? Apple TV. I really, really don't think we're going to see much news on tvOS at WWDC. I think the tvOS news is what we got yesterday.
Yeah.
The Apple Watch, I think it's going to just, you know, the regular health and fitness upgrades, so to speak, on that side. But I'm really curious what the extra stuff will be there, right? I mean, we're going to get the Mac Pro there. I would say that's near certainty that they will preview the Mac Pro there and then ship it later in the year, similar to what they did with the iMac Pro. They also need to update the 12-inch MacBook, so perhaps we'll see something new there on the 12-inch MacBook. I don't think we're going to see a new MacBook Pro until September, October. The monitor might be introduced alongside the Mac Pro in June. They won't be cannibalizing any sales there. And hopefully we'll find out what's going on with AirPower.
Yeah. Rambo's favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which showed some interesting new signs of life. This is our favorite thing to talk about in the show, is all the signs of life that AirPower keeps showing. And the latest one is that it has appeared on some of the packaging for like the new charging case for the AirPods and on the AirPods box itself as well.
Yeah. By the way, I want to plug here, isairpoweroutyet.com.
Great website.
Is this real? Did you make that?
Yep. <That's funny. laughs> Yeah, and I want to go back to what you mentioned about iOS 13, which I think you called 10.15 at one point.
Or macOS. Is it macOS 10.15?
Yeah, that's macOS. So yeah. iOS 13, you mentioned changes to iPad, and I've also seen and heard some stuff about Springboard on iPad with iOS 13, which we were supposed to get on iOS 12, but yep. got pushed forward. Is it correct to say that we're going to see a major redesign of Springboard on iPad?
Major? I think major might be a stretch, because they're going to want to keep some consistency with the iPhone. So I think major might be a stretch, but it's in the eye of the beholder. Noticeable.
Right. Pick your adjective, right? Yeah. It would be cool to see, like, to take more advantage of the big screen. And it's a good point you bring up to consistency with the iPhone, because you wouldn't want something that is completely different, because a big power of the iPad is that it's so consistent with the operating system that people are familiar with when they move for something like an iPhone and they buy an iPad, for example.
Indeed.
What else do we have for WWDC?
Let's talk about the cross-platform timeline once again, since we have Mark on and he has the most clear picture about this.
Okay, so to break it down again, step one was getting some of Apple's Mac apps or some of their iPad apps through Marzipan. And basically, the process is this. They're taking the iPad app and then using the new version of Xcode and exporting it as a Mac app. And so that's what developers are going to get this year, this fall, in all likelihood, unless it gets pushed back. So the idea is you write an iPad app, and then you, in Xcode, will be able to export two versions. One for iOS that you can submit to the iOS App Store, and then a secondary version that you could submit to the Mac App Store. And so what this does is it takes the development work of a Mac app and dramatically simplifies this by basically allowing you to use your iPad app code and run it on a Mac, but it is still two separate binaries. The year after that is doing the same thing for the iPhone, so being able to run iPhone applications on the Mac. And then by the year after that, so we're already talking 2021 here, end of 2020, single app binaries. So one application that can run on any platform and be downloaded from any app store, whether you're on an iPhone, iPad, or Mac. And I imagine eventually they will tie that together with applications that run on the Apple TV and the Apple Watch and as well as the AR headset.
And I guess that this also ties into the ARM transition that feels more and more inevitable, especially if we're talking about like having a single binary that runs everywhere. I guess also like Apple moving Mac onto ARM would also be part of that story.
Yeah, it's all connected. Definitely all connected.
Cool. All right, super exciting stuff. We're definitely all going to look forward to WWDC and see what's actually going to happen. But we want to thank you so much, Mark, for joining us on this episode. It was great talking to you about these things and looking forward to your next big scoop. So if people are not yet following your work, where can they find you and where can they find your writing?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Mark Gurman and on Bloomberg Technology, and I tweet out all those links. So stay tuned for the next story, and I really appreciate you guys having me on. I still obviously feel a connection to 9 to 5 Mac, so great to see what you guys are doing.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, great to have you. All right, so that was really great to talk to Mark Gurman here on Stacktrace, and we're going to have more guests on in the future. This is something that we think is a lot of fun to, you know, have guests on and see their perspective as well. But now it's time to go back to our regular programming, starting with the Rambo Report. But before we do, let's take a very quick break and thank this episode's sponsor, which is our good friends at OWC. OWC was founded all the way back in 1988, so this company has been a reliable go-to for Mac upgrades and accessories for a really long time. The company is perhaps best known for its easy-to-install SSD, memory, and storage upgrade kits for Macs, but this week we have a special deal on OWC's new 10-port USB-C dock. This dock includes a total of 5 USB 3.1 ports, including one USB-C port, but it also packs in high-speed gigabit Ethernet, a front-facing SD card reader, mini display port, a combo audio in and out port, and a pass-through USB-C port for both data and charging. Perhaps most importantly for MacBook users is that this dock is capable of providing up to 80 watts of power, which means that you'll be able to charge any of the new USB-C MacBook or MacBook Pro models at really high speeds. The dock also comes in all MacBook colors, including silver, space gray, rose gold, and normal gold, so that you can have a perfect match for your Mac. And as always, the company includes its 2-year OWC limited warranty with all of its docks. So, here's the deal. For a limited time, OWC is giving all Stacktrace listeners that buy this new 10-port USB-C dock a free 5-port travel dock, which normally costs $49. Just go to maxsales.com/stacktrace to find out more and use promo code 9to5doc with both of those two items in your cart and you'll get this 5-port travel dock for free. Again, that's maxsales.com/stacktrace and promo code 9to5doc for a free 5-port travel dock when you buy the new 10-port USB-C dock from OWC. Thanks so much to OWC for sponsoring Stacktrace. Awesome, so Rambo report time. What have you got for us this week, Rambo?
Kind of unexpected, because we were expecting the latest betas to only include information about the new services that were announced at yesterday's event. But yeah, apparently there's a new pair of earphones called the Power Beats Pro.
Yeah, they look really cool. Like, they're black and they look kind of sporty, but still they look like a kind of dark world cousin to the AirPods. You know how, like, in some video games there would be like the light world and the dark world? Like, this looks like the evil AirPods.
Yeah, those are the black AirPods people have been waiting for, right?
Yeah, exactly. No longer do people have to like send their AirPods into some services that like, you know, spray paint them. Now they can buy the Power Beats Pro, but they can't buy them yet, right? Because you have found this product again as like a 3D model or as a 3D movie inside of iOS 12.2. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So they will work the same way as AirPods. So they have the H1 chip from everything we could gather. So apparently they will have the Hey Dingus support as well. And they will pair the same way as AirPods. It looks like the case supports wireless charging as well. So this is definitely a product that's in the works and it is pretty much ready to ship. But we don't know when. There are some rumors about products shipping in April. Would that include air power? I don't know. Maybe.
Never give up, right?
Yeah, it's weird that they keep they did all of these recent hardware releases last week, with each day was a release almost, but they are holding new products still. Maybe they're not quite ready yet. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the week of shipping will continue, and every week will be the week of shipping for the next year. Yeah, that would be pretty crazy. Yeah, there's still like quite a lot of things coming out, but I think this is also kind of Apple accelerating the way they are shipping products, where, you know, if you think about it, like a few years ago, Apple could pretty much do like one or two events per year. They could show everything they've been working on and they could just ship that. They would have their big iPhone event. They would have one event in March or something showing iPads or Macs. And that was pretty much it. But now they're doing so many more things. I mean, just look at the lineup. Compare the number of items in the lineup compared to just a couple of years ago. There's just so many more things. And I think that just also contributes to the fact that they can't just have events every month, right? Like Tim Cook's full-time job would just be to present stuff all the time. Because yeah, those events, I mean, speaking from someone who like does presentations and knows how much time it takes to rehearse, the quality of those events, that's not something you put together in a week.
Yeah,
that takes definitely. A long, long time. So I think it's this new way of shipping products with press releases and just like scattered out throughout the year. I feel like that's just going to become more and more common.
By the way, we should talk about the pre-event live stream.
Oh, yeah. That was so funny.
Yeah, so before the event, I'm usually monitoring the streaming just because there can be some interesting stuff sometimes. But this time they decided to do it on purpose and they started streaming on the website, which by the way is apple.com/apple-events/livestream. They started streaming there a day early and it looked like an empty Steve Jobs theater, but what we ended up deciding it was is that it was pre-recorded footage that was basically looping, so cutting between different camera angles, but every now and then they would insert something. There would be like a person walking, there would be someone sitting having popcorn, some crazy stuff appearing on the projection system, like some Captain America actor calling someone on an iPhone. So yeah, they decided to have fun with it. And I guess they were also testing everything at the same time, like making sure the streaming was solid.
Making sure all the buttons are on and everything was connected, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love that. Like, in many ways, like, this whole event was very different just in terms of tone and also, like, the way that Tim started it when he said, like, this is going to be a fun morning. You know, it just, like, the entire tone with everything, like, this pre-stream, which, you know, contains some funny Easter eggs and things like that. I just love to see that. Like, I love to see when Apple are like, you know, not taking themselves too seriously, like they're playing some pranks and, you know, they know that people like you and Mac Rumors and all these sites are going to be watching those streams. So, you know, somewhere there was someone in a meeting saying, why don't we just have some fun with it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. All right, so speaking about events, we want to dive a little bit deeper into some of the things that we talked about previously with Mark, but talk a little bit more about them in detail. But before we do that, we need to, of course, reveal the results of our poker game.
Oh.
So as you know, on the last episode, we played poker, which is our tradition to always play poker before an Apple event. And this time around, we both scored pretty well, I must say. Usually, we either score really high because we, you know, we have big bets, or sometimes, like, there was one event where we both had, like, almost minus. And that was also very fun. But this time around, I got 14 points. So I scored 14 points. But you, Rambo, you scored 19 points. You're the Woo-hoo. Winner. Congratulations.
Yay.
So I guess I'm going to be treating you to dinner when you come over to Europe, because we're both going to AppBuilders, the AppBuilders conference in Switzerland in late April.
Yes, that's going to be very, very interesting. And it needs to be like a good thing. Like, I don't know,
yeah,
pasta.
Yeah, of course. We'll spare no expense for this reward. I mean, some expense I will spare, but it will be a good dinner for sure.
Yeah, you can't use your Apple credit card yet.
Not yet. Still have to pay for it myself. Well, I guess I still would have to pay for it even if it was the Apple credit card. You see, that's the lure with credit cards, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so this was a really fun event. And maybe what we should do now is just to walk through our predictions a little bit and talk a bit about them in detail. What do you think about that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this time around we made 10 bets because we did 5 rounds and we picked 2 bets each. And the first one, you know, was pretty obvious. It was the Apple News subscription service, so that happened. And it also features magazines. What do you think about this one, Rambo? Like, when you see this new subscription service, and especially how Tim Cook started talking about Newsstand, you know, in particular, do you feel like this is kind of like Newsstand 2.0, or is this something that excites you? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I wasn't too excited about it before, but having seen it, it looks so good. At least the magazines they show, they look so well laid out and designed, and they sure look great on the big iPad screen. So yeah, I'm kind of wish I could try it out, but unfortunately it's only available in the US and Canada for now.
Yeah, and it seems to be that they're rolling it out mostly in English-speaking countries, because later it's coming to the UK and Australia as well. And that makes sense because, well, you know, you want to have the content in a language that people mostly read in. And especially when it comes to news, people want to read in their local language, right? So for it to launch in Brazil, I guess they would need to both sign up like Portuguese language media, but also have local media, right? Like local newspapers from Brazil. And the same goes for Poland or other countries that are not speaking English.
Yeah, I guess they don't want to release something that a majority of people can't take advantage of. And the localized stuff, it kind of sucks when you speak a second language, to be honest, because I sometimes go to, I'm going to say the name here, Gizmodo. They have a Brazilian version of their website, but I don't want to read that. I want to read the real Gizmodo.
Right.
I want to read the one from the US, and it's such a pain. If I just type gizmodo.com on my browser, it redirects to the Brazilian version, and if disrespecting my browser settings, which are set to English, they are not using like the accept language header. They are using some geo IP location stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of sucks when you live abroad and you want to access stuff in another language. Sometimes that should be easier.
Yeah, I have that problem all the time because I speak a little bit of Polish, but I'm definitely not fluent. Anyone who's tried to learn Polish can probably agree with me that it's very, very hard. But I'm getting there, you know, day by day. But I'm definitely not at the level where I want to read my news in Polish. So I have that problem all the time where I have to go up and find the language icon and switch over to English, or, you know, if there's some content that I want to read in Swedish for some reason, etc. Yeah, but you know, content localization is incredibly hard because it's not only about actually doing the localization. It's so much about like licensing and things like that. And we all know also like when you do translation, sometimes things get lost in translation, right? And
yeah.
So it's an incredibly difficult topic. And that's why I think Apple News in particular is going to see a very, very slow rollout. Like it's going to take a long, long time before the service is, if ever, available worldwide.
Yeah, like I said, the vast majority of people, they just speak their native language and that's it. So they can't just roll it out as a major feature that's available to everyone. And then the person signs up and they see it's all in English and they don't understand English. So yeah, they can't do it.
Yeah. It also seems that the strategy that Apple is taking with a lot of these things, like including Apple Music, is to have like a very strong emphasis on curation, right? They always say in curation and curators and our team recommends this for you. And that also just adds to the whole like, you know, rollout problem, because then you need to have people in each country that are looking at these, you know, local markets and curating it.
Yeah, they do it for the App Store, which is kind of remarkable. There's something about the App Store that blows my mind every time. They, of course, the home tab, the today tab of the App Store is... It depends on the storefront you're using. So I'm using the Brazilian storefront, but my system is in English. So they have the Brazilian storefront today stories, but they show up in English. So they are producing content specific to the Brazilian App Store, but they are localizing it for all these different languages, which is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. And it's especially remarkable now that the App Store review times have become so, so quick. And especially with, you know, there's a lot of apps where you really need to speak the local language. You know, for example, if I were to build an app for the Swedish market specifically, it would be in Swedish, right? So someone who speaks Swedish, which is a very small language on a global scale, would have to review that app. And still, like, it goes through within 24 hours. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I know many Brazilian developers, of course, and I work for a company and we do an app that's only available in Portuguese. It's only for the Brazilian market. And we never had an issue during app review of like the reviewer not understanding the app because it's not in English, and it's not. So I guess they do have specialized reviewers for specific languages.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so moving on to our next bet. It was about iOS 12.2, which we both lost because it did not get specifically mentioned that we thought. And I was so sure that they would just show it on a slide because they usually do. But this, again, just proves that it was such a different event. Like, it wasn't about iOS versions or, you know, Mac versions or hardware or anything like that, or APIs or something like that, frameworks. It was just about content and services. So it makes sense kind of in hindsight, you know, like most things do. But it was an interesting thing to not even see a version number on any of the slides.
Yeah, I think that was because you qualified it. And I mentioned during the poker that I was going to give it less points, because I didn't think they would specify the version. Because they did mention a software update, but they didn't mention the version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was a lot of talk about updates because, like we talked about with Mark, that very few of these things are actually coming right now. So a lot of them are coming, you know, with a future version update. But it was never specifically mentioned. Like, obviously, they're not going to say it's coming in iOS 13.1, right? But yeah, not even 12.2. So that was interesting.
Yeah, it's funny with Apple because even when it's very obvious, they won't say it. Like, it's obvious that the next version of iOS is iOS 13. But until Tim Cook says it during WWDC or Craig, it's not. And no one talks about it because...
doesn't exist.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Yeah, it's in analytics for websites all around the globe. But yeah. It doesn't exist until it's talked about at WWDC.
Exactly. All right. So our next item was about the big, I would say, you know, it seems to be like the big kind of focus of the event in many ways, is especially like how it was saved to the end. There was this very different way of introducing it. And of course, we're talking about the Apple Video Service called Apple TV Plus, which is an interesting name. And even now, just like 24 hours later, it's kind of growing on me. Like, I feel like it's a good name. I like the name. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I'm sure they could come up with something different, but it's kind of obvious. Like, it's this thing with a plus, with something more. And I wonder if they changed the name of the bigger iPhone because of it.
Oh, right. Yeah, because otherwise you would have iPhone 8 Plus, which you already do, but you would have like iPhone 10 Plus and Apple TV Plus, right?
Yeah, and then people would think, well, if I buy the iPhone Plus, do I have to pay a subscription?
Exactly. So it's also like naming a TV is also interesting. I mean, obviously you watch it on a TV and that might be where the name comes from, but there seems to be a heavy emphasis on TV-like content, you know, not movies and things like that, but more focus on TV shows and Oprah Winfrey doing some documentaries and more like the kind of content you would see on broadcast TV kind of historically.
Yeah, I think that's where the TV name comes from, and I thought they would call it TV because they call everything TV these days. And it's overloaded already, so what's one more?
Yeah, you go to the Apple TV page on Apple.com and you've got Apple TV Plus, you've got Apple TV 4K, Apple TV HD, like all the Apple TVs, and they all mean kind of different things. But they're all like Apple stuff you watch on your TV, I guess.
Yeah, you will be able to watch Apple TV Plus content on the TV app on your Apple TV.
Exactly. I'm very curious about the Apple TV app. And before the Apple Arcade announcement with games, I had this feeling that eventually, if things just kept going like they are right now, that tvOS would just become the TV app. Like, we would go back to the previous version of Apple TV, like that kind of UI where you just have a bunch of channels and you're watching them that way. But now with the Arcade announcement, it seems like the TV app will still be here, but it is an interesting kind of abstraction to have on top of tvOS.
The future of TV is games.
Right. The future of TV seems to constantly morph into different shapes and forms.
Yeah, definitely.
So excited about this. Are you excited about Apple TV Plus?
Not much, to be honest. From all of the announcements yesterday, it was the one that I was less interested in. The show with Reese Witherspoon and what's the name of the other one?
It's Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, Jennifer Aniston. I love her. So I'm interested in that show. It sounds interesting from what I read and saw about it. Sounds like it's fun. So I'm definitely going to check it out. But yeah, I'm sure it's going to be high quality content. But yeah, I don't spend too much time watching traditional TV content and movies and stuff like that. So yeah, it was the announcement I was less interested in.
Right. I do watch quite a lot of TV shows. I do really love these kind of like, you know, high budget or well-produced TV shows that we've been seeing from like HBO and Netflix and these kind of things. So I'm just excited to get more of it because I'm happy to subscribe to these services if the content is good. And it seems, at least so far, that they are really, really trying to make really high quality content. I mean, we haven't seen much of the actual shows, but just like from the people involved and from the way it's presented and the way they are really betting on this, it doesn't seem like a, you know, kind of half effort. It seems to be really going all in on doing something great.
Yeah, and it definitely looks like the content is high quality, and we're talking about Apple, so budget is definitely not an issue.
Right, exactly. Spare no expense.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking about budget, next up was our bet that they will introduce a game subscription service. And this is something that, you know, Mark, he had some story about this. You just did some day before based on, you know, other reports and things like that. So there had been rumors about this kind of game subscription service, but it wasn't at all like something that was very, very clear, like obviously coming like the news service or the TV service. But I was super surprised and happy to see that. And I must say, like, for me, again, I might be biased because I am a huge fan of video games, but I was really excited about this announcement and the way that they're phrasing it and the way it seems to be done. Because honestly, like, I love to play games on my iPad and on my iPhone, but it's just so hard to just comb through this huge list of free-to-play games, and you never know, you start playing a game and then, you know, it starts prompting you for some coins or for some money. And this for me is like, you know, I'm, call me old-fashioned, but this is not the way I want to play games. Like, I'm almost only downloading games these days that are paid up front, and almost like the higher price the better, because then I just know there's not going to be any of this like gambling nonsense in the game. So I'm really excited to see Apple like trying to make it more, trying to make these kind of games more visible, and also like bringing in indie developers and also like betting on some interesting alternative games as well.
Yeah, I saw someone commenting on Twitter recently about, you know, these e-commerce websites where you can sort stuff by price and sort by the most expensive first. And they were saying like, who does this? And I replied, I do. Sometimes I do use that. Because I feel like they should add something like that to the App Store. Sort by most expensive first. Because, yeah, when you're talking about apps and games, many times more expensive options are better, because it, of course, this is not true every time for everything, but for apps and games, I feel like this holds true. You will find that these free-to-play games, and of course, it's not all of them, but many of them, you have to basically pay to win, or you are always being inserted into this casino type situation where you have to buy coins and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm really happy about how they're handling this. The fact that they can't have in-app purchases, they can't have subscriptions, they must
have
be
ads.
Complete. Yeah, can't have ads. They can't collect your data for anything and without your consent. Yeah, that's really, really nice.
Yeah, it's really super nice. And the model that I just mentioned, where I will go in and look for the games that are actually like priced accordingly to what usually like a game that is high quality usually charges on the App Store, that model kind of breaks down because you have a lot of games these days who kind of, because of the market, they have to offer a free product and then they have some kind of one time in-app purchase to unlock the full version. And even like big games like the latest Civilization works this way. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and these type of games, I think, would fit perfectly inside of this bundle because that way they can get funded and they can have like really high quality and they don't have to like have the free trial because the whole service is like one big free trial, right? You can trial as many games as you want because you're just paying one amount for it, which we don't know how much it's going to be yet. So I'll save my final kind of my final verdict for when I see the price. So it's not going to be like $99 per month or something. But looking at something like PlayStation Plus and the Xbox Game Pass, I believe it's called, those are like very reasonably priced for what you get for them. And I subscribe to PlayStation Plus on my PlayStation and on the Nintendo Switch. I subscribe to their ones as well. So I will probably sign up for this one just to get more games and to also discover new games because that's also really hard to do on the App Store today.
Yeah, and the editorial stuff they are doing with the App Store is just remarkable. It's really high quality stuff. I sometimes just browse the App Store just to read the stories because they are beautifully laid out and written. Yeah, it's really good stuff. And the new arcade tab they demoed looks really interesting as well. And I'm sure the games that end up joining this initiative are going to get featured and have stories written about them. So it's going to be easier to find stuff you want to play and in a nice user interface. And there's a form on Apple's developer website, by the way, for developers to pitch their games to Apple Arcade. So we'll leave a link in the show notes. If you are a developer and you're listening and you have an idea for a game, send it to Apple Arcade. Maybe you can be one of the first ones to be there.
I'm going to Xcode right now and I'm selecting File, New Project. All right, we're definitely going to come back to this topic later. We do want to talk more about games as well. We haven't done so much on the show yet, but I think we have a lot of interesting things to talk about. But for now, let's move on with the event. And the next one is a big thing, and we didn't bet very high on it, but it did happen. And that was that we saw a new credit card Apple Pay service, and is not only a software service, it's also a physical credit card, the Apple Card. Rambo, how does seeing that titanium card with only the name engraved in the front, how does that make you feel?
I was drooling when I watched that. I mean, I was busy because I was writing for 9to5 Mac about the new credit card, so I couldn't pay much attention. Yeah, so I thought they had made this video as kind of like a joke. But
yeah,
then when I
too.
Realized it was actually a real credit card, I was shocked. I really want one of those. By the way, they're not pioneers. Apparently, there's an American Express credit card, which is titanium. So yeah, Apple is not, they're not the first ones to do this. And it's funny how our jokes kind of became a reality. Like, we talked about, imagine this credit card with just the Apple logo and your name. And of course, it's not made of glass or plastic. It's
or
even
it doesn't
better.
Have a screen.
Yeah, it doesn't have a screen. but yeah, it's really beautiful. And I saw some people moaning about the fact that it doesn't support contactless.
Well, that's
which
why you have Apple Pay, right?
Which to me doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you want contactless, you use your iPhone or your Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is super interesting. And for me, like, that whole segment presenting the credit card, it was super interesting, well-polished, you know, great presentation. But it's very different. Like, it didn't almost feel like I was at an Apple event anymore. And that the same can be said also for a lot of the other segments. It was, again, a very different event. But, you know, seeing Apple on stage, like talking about like cashback and talking about debt and interest rates and stuff like that, like that was very interesting for me to see.
Yeah, definitely. And the way they're positioning this new service is also very interesting. And they are kind of late to this game, at least if you consider some markets. I don't know how this is in the US, but at least here, there's been a boom in financial tech companies, which provide services for inexpensive credit and debit cards, which are fully digital, and the physical card is just like the Apple card. It doesn't do much, really. And you do everything through your device, and they use the device to make the statements easier to read, and you can control the limits and lower interest rates, no fees, that kind of stuff. That's been happening here already with many, many companies. It's not one or two, it's like dozens of little small banking service companies, startups. How is this in Europe or Poland, John? Are there any similar services there?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of them popping up, especially like alternative banks and things like that, that are more like they're banks that are only online, like they don't have any offices at all, you know, modernizing things like you mentioned, having everything in an app and online and these sort of things, and also providing, you know, better numbers in many senses and trying to disrupt the industry. And I believe that's something we're going to keep seeing in all sorts of fields. Like, technology is disrupting almost everything for better and for worse. And, you know, banking is definitely not going to be left out. Like, I think anything that has some kind of established rules and established market is going to get disrupted by technology, you know, one way or another.
Yeah, there's this company which I have a card from, and they started as just a credit card with an app, a really cool credit card, a really cool app. The card is purple and it's really pretty. Mm, nice. And they then started offering basically a checking account. It's all online. You can't, there's no bank you can go to deposit money or anything like that. You just transfer money from other accounts, which is super easy to do. And all of the support is done through their app using a chat with very nice people. And recently they added a rewards feature as well. So yeah, this digital credit card thing is definitely something that's growing worldwide, apparently. And the user interface in the wallet app they show, to me, looks really, really good. And the wallet team has been doing a really good job recently. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think they are solving some really hard problems. Like, you have some really like dense information that you want to display on a small surface. Like, they really have to do a lot of design work around like information architecture and hierarchies and things like that. And, you know, starting with just having your passes, like your boarding passes for your planes and things like that in wallet, and then adding, you know, Apple Pay on top of that, and now adding the Apple Card on top of that, it still seems like a nice way of navigating, and you don't have this cluttering up that you see in so many other apps when new features get added. So I feel like they've been like really good at paying their, you know, design debt, if you will, and not just stacking things on top of each other in an incoherent way, but rather just making things look and feel familiar. Because it really does, like when you see this new UI, you know, anyone, not anyone maybe, but most people could probably say, oh, this is the wallet app, right? It looks like the wallet app because it has that like really unified, consistent design language.
Yeah, and it even has some nice animations.
We all love nice animations, right? And it just looks modern, like the animations and the way you like flick through. It's for me like some of the best applications of this modern like flat iOS 7 plus era of design, where it's not boring. Like, it's not just white with black text. Like, it's because of all the passes and everything. If you've been flying different airlines like me and save all the passes, you have like this whole rainbow boarding cards inside.
Oh, you're one of those pass hoarding people.
Yeah, of course, because they don't take any physical space, you know. I just save them for memorabilia. I even have my WWDC pass from like 2014 in there. You know, I just look at it sometimes.
Now you're like, just teasing me because I didn't get a ticket.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad. Sorry about that. All right, so really cool thing with the Apple Card. Really looking forward to see what's going to happen with that. Again, it's probably going to be a very slow rollout because of, you know, banking system and financials and things like that, but still very cool to see. The next item we were betting on is that all the content that we saw was going to be family friendly. And, you know, we didn't see that much content, to be fair. We only saw like this... very quick, what do they call it? Like scissor reel, right? Yeah. Like when it's just a super quick cut. But it did seem family friendly. The people on stage were definitely family friendly. There was even like a Sesame Street coding content, you know?
They super were cool. Too much family friendly to my taste.
Right. But it's, it's all that we expected, you know, very family friendly stuff and no kind of... super violent things. And honestly, also for me, like, I'm kind of happy about that. Like, I understand that in order to, like, tell a compelling story, you need sometimes, you know, things that are provocative, if you want to call them that, or that are, like, violent and stuff like that in order to, like, you know, increase the drama in the TV show. But I think so many things these days, and again, now I'm probably going to sound old-fashioned, but... sometimes I just feel like there's just so much violence and crazy things in all the things that we watch. And I would also love for things to be a little bit dialed back and just focus on the acting and telling the good stories without the need for, like, you know, crazy violence and blood flying everywhere in every single TV show.
You can get your gore from HBO. It's fine.
Right, exactly. All right, the next item we did not end up seeing, which is the bundle. And that makes sense because these things haven't launched yet. So it would be strange for them to say, here's a bundle, but you can't get anything in the bundle until 6 months. But I still want to talk to you about this. Like, do you still feel like the bundle is on the table, or do you feel like there's not going to be a bundle?
I believe there's going to be a bundle. It makes sense for them to not have announced it yet because, like you mentioned, not everything is available yet. And it will definitely make sense for them to bundle everything together as a one bundle payments per month or year. And maybe they are also working on extending their family. Because we didn't mention this, but everything they announced has a subscription price. But it also has the family subscription built in with no extra charge, so there's no family plan.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
that can, like, say, make a big difference for some families. Like, imagine if you have like 5 kids, you know, and they all need individual subscription for some other services. You know, this would make a huge difference in the monthly cost.
Yeah, but I mean, you could have 7 kids and like the regular subscription is $9.99 and the family one is $12.99. But now you can, doesn't matter if you have a family, if you don't have a family, it's just $9.99 in the case of the new stuff, for example. You just pay the regular one and it's automatically available to your family. And I wonder if they are working on something like that for Apple Music. And maybe it's one of the reasons why they didn't announce the bundle subscription for everything, because they want to be able to do this family offer for everything together, and they want to include Apple Music in there.
Yeah, Apple Music is a tricky one because the music industry is very, very different. I feel, you know, just from my understanding of it, in terms of like how it works with licensing and things like that, where it feels like, again, this is a very naive perspective I have, but it feels like with Apple News, they could do something like that. But in order to do it with Apple Music, it would be much, much harder. Like, it would require a lot more negotiation with these labels that have still a lot of power. With magazines, you can make deals with individual magazines, and they still had that texture acquisition that they were, you know, getting a lot of these deals from. But with music, it seems like, you know, that's going to be a bit more complicated.
Yeah, we also don't know if maybe, like, let's take, for example, the new subscription, if maybe they would be able to offer it for, like, $7.99 and the family plan was going to be $9.99, but they are just charging right. for the family plan to everyone.
Exactly. And everyone's like super happy. It's like, yay, we're all getting yeah. family plan for free.
Yeah, I mean, there's no free lunch. Someone is paying for it.
Exactly. All right. So, yeah, we're going to look more for bundles. I guess this is something also that you can look for when you're spelunking, right? I'm sure that there's mm-hmm. at some point going to be some kind of symbol in the code that refers to bundling or some localized string or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure this will eventually end up leaking from some website or iOS thing because, yeah, it's not the type of secret they would want to keep that much a secret because it's not that huge a deal. And yeah, they will have to have some landing page or some onboarding screen with it eventually. So yeah. I'll keep looking for it.
Cool. Next up is my favorite item. And I just, my only regret is I didn't bet more on it. So the bet was that there will be some celebrity on stage that will make an awkward appearance. And we were discussing over iMessage as we were watching this, and it started out with Steven Spielberg. He wasn't very awkward. He was a little bit awkward, you know, it was a little bit like out of his comfort zone being a director, you know, here he's on stage, you know. But he was very good. I mean, Steven Spielberg is always very good, and he had a lot of good things to say, etc. But then, you know, things started to get more awkward and then more awkward. And at some point, you just texted me, okay, John, you win. It's awkward. I think that was when the Sesame Street Big Bird came on stage to talk about Swift development.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sobbing at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I was crying. I was laughing so much, I was crying because it was so awkward.
Yeah, it was pretty awkward.
Especially for me, like, I didn't grow up watching that. So for me,
right,
it was
yeah,
just like someone dressed up as a chicken on stage.
Yeah, it was also very cool, I think, how they did the transitions where they made the entire room black, like dark, and then the celebrity just appeared on stage, right? There was no like Tim Cook introducing them, like, and here's Steve Carell, you know? There was this, like, black, and then a big yellow bird on stage, like, out of nowhere. That was just the shock at that moment was just
And by the way, intense. The transition between what happened before, the chicken and the chicken, was longer because they had to add all of the scenery and the puppets had to be set up in a way, and so it took longer between what came before, and so everyone was like, oh, what's coming up next? And then a huge chicken on stage.
We're gonna get so many angry emails from people because you call the Sesame Street bird a chicken, but
it looked like a chicken to me.
You're just digging yourself a deeper and deeper hole here, Rambo. I'm just gonna save you from that, just to save the awkwardness, right? We're talking about awkwardness. It's becoming too meta here. But in general, like, so the segment was a bit awkward. And of course, like, you know, people are out of their comfort zone. It's very different from an Apple event perspective as well to have like people just talking on stage about something they're making, but they're not showing any trailers for it. They're not like showing the actual thing. They're just like talking about their vision. And a little bit, some of these were a little bit hit or miss, but I did overall enjoy the segment, even though it was awkward. It was really cool to hear from these people, like why they are making these things, and also having an emphasis on like the actual art of making some of these things rather than just saying like, here's a new product. Because sometimes these TV shows and games and all other kind of art are, of course, products. I mean, that's what they are. Essentially, you're selling them to people. But I do love that we can take a little bit more of a, you know, human perspective and have the creators come out and talk about what they're making.
Yeah, I have an opinion about that segment in general in terms of the event itself, not the content, that I think it was more impactful for the people who were present at the event because you have the stars right in front of you. But
right.
Watching at home, I think it was kind of boring, to be honest. I would have preferred to have been shown trailers, like longer trailers of each specific content. And then maybe after that, have like all stars on stage at the same time. Maybe each one talking just like 2 minutes about what they're working on. I think it dragged a little bit. But yeah, I'm just nitpicking.
the pacing was very different, right? Again, like the transitions were not there. Like a lot of the energy that Apple has in an event like this comes from those really fluid transitions, right? Where Tim Cook will be presenting something and then he will say, oh, to tell you all about it, here's Craig Federighi. And then, welcome up, Craig. You know, and then you have already like, you know, an applause. Craig comes on stage. He starts with some demo. And the pacing is just like really solid. But here it was like going to a black screen, then someone coming out and talking for like 10, 15 minutes. And then, or it seemed like it. And then black screen again. Like there was no transition in between. And I think if they wanted to have to keep up the pacing here, they should have used like trailers and music and like, you know, in a world, you know, dum, 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 dum. That would have kept the pacing. But I feel also that would have been not very like interesting. It would have been very more like on the surface. And here we got to go a little bit deeper, which I kind of appreciated.
Yeah, I agree. It was just like something for those who were watching at home. I think it was a little bit slow, but yeah. I think they did the right thing.
Especially that part with the chicken, am I right?
No, yeah, of course. My favorite part.
All right. Your favorite part. Our next bet was about Steven Spielberg, that Steven Spielberg would appear on stage, and he did appear on stage like we talked about, and that was really cool to see. It was really cool to see all of these celebrities, and especially like really big ones like Steven Spielberg, J.J. Abrams, Oprah. You know, it was very cool to see. And it seemed like they were genuinely excited. It wasn't just like this, you know, collect the check to say something good about Apple. Like, it seemed like they were happy to be there.
Yeah, the Oprah one was very funny. First of all, because there's this whole Oprah thing of, you get a car, you get a car. And we were joking about they were going to have her release Air Power. Right. You get an Air Power and everybody gets Air Power. And we were talking to Zach from 9to5. He was there and we told him to check under his seat if there was an Air Power there. And also because it looked to me like Tim Cook was kind of starstruck by Oprah.
Oh, yeah. He definitely was. Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't be, right?
It's emotional.
Oprah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was very, very interesting segment. Yeah. And she's fun.
Yeah, it was very cool. Again, like very different event, very different vibe, but just very fun to see in general, I think. The final thing we were betting on is around pricing. And well, we got that one really wrong because we didn't get any pricing, more or less. We only heard about Apple News Plus, and that one's going to cost $9.99. And I thought it was going to cost $5. So, you know, that's how much I value my news, apparently. But then again, I wasn't thinking that it would include 3,000 different magazines, right? 3,000, yeah. Not 300.
Yeah, during the segment yesterday, you were sending me messages like, oh, is this thing going to cost $50 a month? Because
yeah, I mean
that's
all the
a
content.
Lot of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. So at this point, $9.99 seems like a bargain. But yeah, I thought more it was going to be about news specifically, and then a $5 price point might have made more sense. But lost that bet, unfortunately. But overall, came out with plus points, so I'm happy about that. And didn't beat you this time, but you know, as everyone knows, I hope that there are some people at home cheering on me when we are playing these poker events, because I am feeling a little bit like the underdog here.
Oh, yeah. But for this event, you know, we were pretty level.
I think we were, especially since you share all of your findings with me. So that also puts us on a more level playing field. Just overall, like, should we just close with some overall kind of thoughts about the event? Like, what's the verdict from your side? Like, how did you feel about the event? How do you feel about these things going forward? Are you excited for them to launch and things like that?
Yeah, I was expecting a kind of boring event because we are usually more excited for the software and the hardware and stuff like that. But it wasn't. It was fun overall. Unfortunately, since I was working at the same time, I couldn't pay full attention to it all the time. But yeah, it was interesting. My favorite things were the Apple Arcade and the Apple Card. Looking forward to those, even though the card will not be here for a long, long time.
Right. Yeah, that's going to probably take a while. I'm also extremely excited about Apple Arcade. I'm excited about everything, pretty much. I actually really love this event. Like I mentioned, I love that there was a different event. I don't think that we need to have the same formula over and over again. First some store updates, then some sales numbers, then some new products, then maybe one more thing. I love when they mix things up. And it started with that intro. Like, that intro video was so good. Like, it was beautiful. And all the typography throughout the slides and everything, like, it just felt like a different event on so many levels, and I just really enjoy that. Then, of course, like, I also wish that all of these things would launch now. I wish that they would be available where I live, but they're not, and it's going to take a while. But still, I'm excited about the things they showed, and I think they showed them in a cool way, even though the pacing with the celebrities was a little bit awkward, a little bit weird, but still, overall, I really enjoyed it. So, a big thumbs up for this event.
You mentioned the typography. When they showed that last video with white background and cool typography animating, really cool motion graphics, it reminded me of the Thousand No's for Every Yes video.
Oh, yeah.
Which is my favorite keynote video of all time so far, because it's such a beautiful motion graphics piece. Tim talked about a person that inspires us, and I thought, are they doing something about Steve Jobs? because the style of the video was so similar to the Thousand No's for Every Yes video, which I wonder if it was maybe the same group or the same person that made it.
Yeah, might be. And I agree. I think it's a really good parallel to draw to that video, because both of these videos show that you can make something extremely beautiful and engaging with just a very small color palette, and sometimes even just black and white and just text, right? Just typography, like beautiful typography and beautiful motion. And that's just really inspiring to me. And I think I've talked about it on the show before, but in general, like, when I see something like that, I not only feel like that's beautiful, but I also kind of feel like I could learn how to make that, because I can type text on a keyboard. I can learn some kind of motion program. And that's just really empowering. Like, when you see something beautiful being made with tools that you know that you could also use with enough training.
Yeah, it's like Johnny Ive always says that there's a beauty in simplicity. And I think it shows, yeah, that type of content definitely shows that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so this is it for our very special episode about the very special Apple special event. A lot of special in that sentence. If you have some special comments about this event, then feel free to tweet them at us. We'd love to hear what you think about this show. What did you think about our segment with Mark Gurman? And what do you think about these services that Apple announced? So feel free to find us on Twitter. The show itself is at StackTracePod on Twitter, and I am at John Sundell, and Mr. Rambo is at _inside. So feel free to let us know what you think. But that's it for this episode. Thanks so much again to our really good friends at OWC for sponsoring this episode. But most of all, thank you so much for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next week. So until then, say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.